Hello, I'm Merrick Schneider. Welcome to this podcast of articles from the Wall Street Journal, a presentation of AIRS LA. You are listening to this recording, which is provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyrighted property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Today's first article is titled The Wisdom of Keith Richards at 82 by Rich Cohen. Then we have an article by Elias Light, Christmas Music is Humming Along. Benjamin Katz wrote, Passengers sued Boeing over exposure to fumes on flight. Then Mark Oppenheimer has Holidays Begin at Home. And we'll finish that up with an article by Mike Kerrigan, My Life Story, Told in Bumper Stickers. All these articles are from recent editions of the Wall Street Journal. So let's begin with today's first one, The Wisdom of Keith Richards at 82. In America, the average man can expect to live 75.8 years. Rolling Stones drummer Charlie Watts had gone 5 years past that and was still playing for audiences shortly before he died in 2021. Stone's founder, Brian Jones, died young in his swimming pool, but several of the band's other iconic members, from Ronnie Wood, 78, to Bill Wyman, 89, have won the battle with the actuarial tables. Mick Jagger, the demonic frontman, was barely slowed by the replacement of his aortic valve in 2019. An octogenarian, Mick can still be seen dancing on the ashes of Western civilization. And yet, for some reason, it is the band's rhythm guitarist who personifies immortality. As the bumper sticker has it, think of the world will be leaving Keith Richards. How this rip-drunk ragamuffin, who turns 82 on December 18th, not only survived but stayed relevant is a mystery, a puzzle wrapped inside a guitar string. Solving it may be the best hope the rest of us have of aging gracefully. I date my life with Keith to the spring of 1982, when, in the finale of the Central School Talent Show in Glencoe, Illinois, I played the part of the guitarist in the Stones cover band that brought down the house with Jumpin' Jack Flash. The experience taught me not only about rock and roll and the lure of stardom, but about the vicissitudes of the powers that be, aka the man, Vice Principal Armour, who handed me a 3-day suspension for the trip I made into the seats during the solo, for the cigarette I lit, and for how I tossed it into the crowd, the orange tip shedding sparks that had turned over and over. It was while preparing for the show that I first really learned about Keith, about his legendary 1961 meeting with Jagger at the train station in Dartford, the English town where they both grew up, about their mutual love for the Chicago Blues. Jagger was carrying a stack of albums from Chess Records, about the Stones' apprenticeship in the basement clubs and bars around London, about the first rush of fame and how Keith shut himself off from it behind a wall made of heroin. It was living through the chaos and tragedies of the 1960s and 70s, the river of opioids, the demise of Janis, Jimmy, Jim and the rest, that gave him the vampiric aura. As the roadie puts it in Wayne's World 2, Keith cannot be killed by conventional weapons. Looking at a picture of young Keith, Gaptooth and Geeky, besides old Keith, as gnarled as Yoda, is a lesson in the nature of time and what the years can do. The damage that makes him seem immortal, not just what he lived through, but how he survived. What Hemingway called grace under pressure. The ability to maintain a steady inner atmosphere even when the whip comes down. In his memoir, Life, Keith describes writing Angie in a Swiss sanitarium after narrowly surviving yet another overdose. It's Keith squeezing his life like a press, turning a brush with death into maybe the most beautiful ballad in rock and roll that gives us hope. He says he does not know where the songs come from. Great songs write themselves, he explains in life. You're just being led by the nose or the ears. The skill is not to interfere with it too much. But I think I do know. It's the confrontation between a sensibility and the abyss. Not just touching the edge, but coming away with a song that makes a person seem everlasting. To me, the lesson is simple. If you keep going long enough, if you keep playing, if you stay in the game, you get up just one more time than you've been knocked down, people will ascribe to you a quality that is indistinguishable from wisdom. And now Christmas music is humming along. The group Pentatonix are known for their a cappella rendition of Christmas classics. They used to start touring after Thanksgiving, but this year they kicked it off on November 8th. We're like, well, we don't know if somebody in Utah is going to want to purchase the tickets for a Christmas concert on November 8th, but let's try it, said Sarah Beswitsky, who co-manages the group. Even starting so early, the 26-date arena tour has been going super well, she continued. The world is really looking for this. Listeners are embracing Christmas music earlier than ever and playing more of it. On December 1, 2019, 14 holiday songs were in the top 50 on Spotify in the United States. This December 1st, the tally was already at 30. By December 10th, 20 of the top 25 tracks were Christmas themed. The only non-holiday songs able to withstand the deluge are juggernauts like The Fate of Ophelia by Taylor Swift and Golden from the hit Netflix movie K-pop Demon Hunters. Matt Bailey, founder of the music analytics company Hit Momentum, suggested that during periods of stress, listeners are more likely to return to familiar comforts. The traditions of the holiday season, especially the music, provide us an emotional anchor as we face rising costs, a shaky job market, political strife at home, and war abroad, Bailey said. He pointed out that Christmas streaming spiked early during the pandemic in 2020 as well. The ubiquity of holiday songs also represents a rare monocultural music moment. Even though listeners are spread across multiple streaming services and social media platforms, many of them are mainlining the same tunes. For Talia Quaynes, an editorial lead at Spotify, whose purview includes North American Christmas playlists, holiday music serves to make people feel part of a collective and make them feel good. The Usual Suspects led the holiday charge on this year's chart. Mariah Carey's stampeding anthem, All I Want for Christmas Is You, Brenda Lee's country tinge confection, Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, and Wham's wistful gem, Last Christmas. A handful of tracks from the 2010s are sprinkled among the older stewards, like Salt on an Icy Sidewalk, Ariana Grande's Santa Tell Me, Justin Bieber's Mistletoe, and Kelly Clarkson's Underneath the Tree. Diehard holiday fans queue up these songs well before November 1st. You would be amazed at how many people are listening to Christmas music in the summer, Crane said. Spotify observes the first big jump in holiday song streaming on September 1st, she noted. Activity ticks up again the next month. Holiday playlist creation in the United States rose 60% from October 2024 to October 2025. Come November, for many listeners, it's all Christmas music all the time. Artists get into the spirit. Christmas songs are fun to write and low pressure, said the music manager Jonathan Daniel. His clients include Sia, Train, and Fall Out Boy, who have all released holiday albums or singles. People don't judge Christmas music the way they judge other releases, especially for the big pop stars, Daniel added. Around Christmas, listeners are also more open to a wide range of sounds. A cappella music is not usually commercially successful, but Pentatonix has sold more than 9 million holiday albums in the United States. The singer Lofty has had streaming success with songs that led to bossa nova and 1950s vocal jazz. Her version of Winter Wonderland, released back in 2023, is earning more than 1.3 million plays a day on Spotify. Lofty has often said Christmas is when the whole world listens to jazz, said Max Gringer, who manages the singer. How could she not be part of that? Each year, Lofty adds a song or two to her Christmas album. Even some artists estate, while unable to write or record new Christmas tracks, find creative ways to get in on the holiday action. Bing Crosby, a Christmas titan, racks up 70% of his annual streams in December, according to Adam Lowenberg, chief marketing officer at Primary Wave Music, a music publishing company that also markets prominent artist catalogs. The Crooner's estate partnered with Primary Wave to reach new listeners, which led to a fresh version of Crosby's Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow in October with vocals from the country star Lainey Wilson. That followed a similar effort last year when V from the K-pop group BTS hopped on Crosby's song White Christmas. Not easy to break into the holiday canon with a new track, but artists are incentivized to try anyway. Daniel described the holiday hit as a little ATM machine. She has scored with her 2017 album, Every Day is Christmas, which is earning close to 8 million streams a day. She wrote every song on the release and Snowman, Don't Cry Snowman, Don't You Shed a Tear, Who Will Hear My Secrets If You Don't Have Ears, has become a particular favorite, with more than 1.3 billion plays on Spotify alone since its release. Another one of Daniel's clients is the rock band Weezer, who released a six-song holiday collection back in 2008. These days, he said, they're thinking about doing one more Christmas album. And now, passengers sued Boeing over exposure to fumes on flight. A law professor is suing Boeing, alleging that exposure to a toxic fume event on a 737 plane operated by Delta Airlines led to his lasting brain and respiratory injuries. The lawsuit, which his lawyer says is the first on this topic led by a passenger on a United States commercial flight, underscores the potential legal liability facing the industry as it grapples with a surge in cases of fume events in recent years. In late August last year, Jonathan Harris was flying home from a conference in Atlanta to Los Angeles when passengers reported a dirty, sock-like odor filling the cabin after landing and which worsened as they waited 45 minutes on the ground for a gate to become available, according to the complaint. At the time, Harris was 44 and a lecturer at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. Along with other passengers, Harris complained of trouble breathing before he vomited into a plastic bag at his seat. Harris alleges he has had lasting symptoms since, citing balance and motor skill issues, tremors and memory loss, and cognitive defects, the complaint says. The suit, filed in Arlington, Virginia, where Boeing is based, is the latest to allege that exposure to vaporized engine oils during a flight has led to long-term illness. While passengers have joined earlier suits filed by flight crew, Harris is the first brought against Boeing in which a passenger on a commercial flight is the lead plaintiff, according to Zoe Littlepage, one of Harris's lawyers. Her firm, Houston-based Littlepage Booth, has previously settled 8 similar actions with Boeing for undisclosed sums over the past decade, with 3 others still active, she said. The lawsuit is seeking $40 million in damages. The industry has for years maintained that incidents are rare and haven't been shown to pose significant health risks when they do occur. Spokespeople for Delta and Boeing declined to comment. Not everyone reacts to toxic fumes in the same way, and most walk away without noticeable symptoms. But exposure has also led to diagnosis of brain injuries in pilots, cabin crews, and passengers, the Wall Street Journal has reported. The journal analysis showed that fume event reports on Boeing and Airbus aircraft were almost 10 times more common in 2024 than a decade earlier. With the exception of Boeing's 787 plane, all modern commercial jetliners draw air supply via the engines, making them prone to fume events. Internal industry data found a rate of at least 22 fume events a day in the United States alone. Harris said in an interview that his four-hour flight was at first forgettable before passengers noticed a rancid smell while the aircraft sat waiting for a gate. Harris, who was in window seat 35F, said he urged the crew to let them off the aircraft. Passengers are getting sick and vomiting, Harris said in a text message to his wife, reviewed by the journal. We need to get off the plane, but they won't move, and we told the captain twice. When the aircraft parked and the doors opened, Harris said his head was throbbing, he felt confused, and was struggling to string sentences together. There was nowhere to go, you know? You're trapped in this metal container, he said. The next morning, Harris was sent to emergency care by his primary care doctor, where blood tests showed low levels of oxygen, high levels of bicarbonate, and carbon monoxide levels that were at the cusp of upper limits. Over the next few months, he struggled to stand for extended periods and started giving lectures while sitting in a chair. A regular runner before, he felt unsteady on his feet, and on one occasion, he tripped and broke his ankle. He said he was prescribed an inhaler from a pulmonologist for tightness in his chest. He still regularly gets bad headaches and avoids flying where he can. When he does fly, he carries a gas mask. I had no idea that this was a problem, Harris said of contaminated air events on airplanes. Now we're back to holidays begin at home. When my wife and I were raising young children, it was easy enough to decide where to spend the holidays. While our more intrepid friends treated school breaks as opportunities to see Europe or tour national parks and Civil War battlegrounds, we seldom left our home in Connecticut. Some parents aim to show their children the world. We've considered a full night's sleep for us as the kids a parenting victory. Vacations weren't for adventuresome backpacking. They were blessed respites from the morning breakfast rush and carpool. As a result, since our firstborn arrived back in 2006, we've spent every Hanukkah, Passover, and national holiday at home. Now that our youngest is old enough to travel easily, and we could go somewhere, I have little desire to. Hanukkah starts on Sunday night, and I have been thinking about how much I value home-based tradition. I haven't given my children the gift of seeing the world, but I like to think I've given them something equally valuable and far less costly, the pleasure of staying put. We savor traditions that regularly travel to new locales wouldn't allow. For 8 nights every December, our children light their menorahs and sing prayers together. They open the traditional gifts one night, matching pajamas from grandparents, another night, books from an aunt and uncle, another night, chocolate gelt. The other 5 are grab bags. Many years, there is an all-sibling photo when the 5 of them can be persuaded to sit still long enough for my wife to focus her camera. Many years, too, there is a group photo with the dog. It is not only Hanukkah we repeat year after year. Passover Seders are at our house. At first, we hosted because it was logical. We lived between both sets of parents, and as vegetarians, we wanted to be able to eat from the menu. It's a lot of work, and I once hoped we'd alternate. But now I'm glad for the regularity of it all. The same traditional foods, my matzo ball soup, my wife's flowers chocolate cake, the same Haggadah, Richard Kodor's illustration of the Passover story. not to mention the guests. We have a regular crew, and I'd miss each one if we went anywhere else. That includes our children, our parents, and an assortment of close friends. What would Passover be without our neighbor, Arnold, the septuagenarian art house movie theater owner, who regularly invites our son over for age-appropriate cappuccinos, aka hot chocolate. Being at home is a ritual, as religious in its way as remembering the Maccabees' indistinguishable lamp or the Exodus from Egypt. Being in my house, the only one our family has ever lived in, eating, laughing, arguing, it's how I want to celebrate my good fortune when the seasons call me to. This attachment to home-based ritual, as it happens, coheres with Judaism. Historically, you might say we are a religion of ancestor worship. Our services are heavy on the patriarchs, and for some, the matriarchs too. God is important. Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca, Jacob and his two wives. The stories of the Hebrew Bible frequently relate to central questions of family life: where to settle, whom to marry, when to have children. There are no desert hermits in our tradition, only moms and dads tending home fires. Judaism is not a celestial religion lifting us into the clouds, nor is there any commandment to spread the religion over the face of the earth. We have no obligation to travel far and wide to make religious pilgrimages. Rather, we are directed to make Jewish families and then to make their home centers of Jewish life. I do not imagine my kids would have been worse off if they'd grown up globe-trotting, but I'm not sure they'd have been better. As someone once said, children do not need magical experiences. Childhood is magical enough. So when I say there's something magical about staying put, something holy about home, I can speak only for myself. And of course, for the dog. And now, my life story told in bumper stickers. It started innocently. I put a dancing bear sticker on the back of my pickup truck to express my love for the Grateful Dead. Then I added a Marian Call Your Mother sticker, a dry reminder to pray the rosary, my favorite Catholic meditative prayer. That was it for a while. Then a strange thing started happening. I found myself collecting more and more stickers. Now, whenever I'm somewhere I want to remember, I ask the proprietor for a sticker. Once home, I add it to my truck's increasingly crowded tailgate. It is not life's big moment that I mark, and no statement is political. There's only one non-negotiable requirement for membership in this exclusive adhesive club. The moment it recalls must be meaningful to me. One sticker says, "That rug really tied the room together," a line from the movie The Big Lebowski. It celebrates the moment that Joe, my oldest son, said these words to his mother, who rearranged our family room, and I knew his droll sense of humor was coming into its own. Another recalls a seafood spot in Florida where my family and I once ate dinner. I was ravenous and so gorged myself that Hope, my daughter, still giggles as she recalls my saying, "I understand how that Swedish king Adolf ate himself to death." Mama Tried stickers appear more than once. This is because, it's both a Merle Haggard classic and the unofficial theme song of my red-blooded 14-year-old son, Jack, on whom it's impossible to throw a saddle. Also, these stickers are free. Businesses are generally excited when a customer says, "This is the best fried chicken in Boulder, and I want to tell the world about it." Even when I purchase them, it amounts to pocket change. My return on sticker investment is unbeatable, considering negligible costs, joyful memories unlocked, and the frequency of unlocking them. Because I use my truck every day, I get a pleasant mood reset every time I pass by my tailgate. This habit also keeps me out of trouble. If I were to go somewhere I'm not supposed to go, many would know. If I drive too aggressively, I risk having a friend or neighbor saying, not "some jerk cut me off," but "that jerk Kerrigan cut me off." Gray Ghost, as I call my truck, feels like part of my family. I can't imagine ever parting, and so I won't. When the time comes, I'll bury it in my backyard, using a sloping hill to ensure the tailgate remains above ground. I'll fill up the bed with sand to create a sandbox for future grandchildren. Enjoy the little things in life, because one day you'll look back and realize they were the big things. These words attributed to Kurt Vonnegut are true, and I don't have to wait to look back on my life, just have to be at the back of my truck. That brings us to the end of today's articles. I'm Merrick Schneider, and I'll be back soon with more articles. Thank you for listening.